They are biblically conceived by grace, by God's unmerited choice, by His gift of the elect stone. Just the opposite of sheep who don't want clear and biblically focused shepherding. Perhaps a concrete example from my shepherd days, parish days would illustrate this point. Church discipline, so widely and universally practiced in our synod and in the church at large, is under real pressure today, not only from without, but also from within, to become very specific in the case where a man is guilty of forsaking his wife for another, and despite the admonitions of a loving pastor and elders, remains unrepentant, particularly if he is one who has lots of wealth or lots of relatives or enjoys a position of status in the community, many, also within, will be reluctant to exercise Christian discipline. Lest we grow complacent in the matter, I was struck recently when I read from Helmut Thielicke, not a theologian noted for his great conservatism, that if a pastor is divorced or suffers a divorce, for whatever reason, he should resign his office simply for the sake of the church. That seems terribly hard, but it was, until very recent times, assumed by many. God's elect, the priesthood of all believers, defines itself and will shine as a community that has been chosen and called out sola gratia. God has ordained certain good works that we should walk in them, and we will walk. Perhaps the Christian church will begin to look more and more like the Amish, out of step with the times, out of sync with the powers that be. But think of the contribution of Christian laymen who clearly care more and take more pleasure in their children than in the kind of car they drive, or who have regard for the elderly. Isn't it precisely in this role that the priesthood of all believers, according to Exodus and 1 Peter, take on a wonderfully missionary focus as they live out their election, not perfectly, always hidden, but nevertheless declaring the praises of Him who called them out of darkness into His marvelous light, and gladly going on to offer spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God? Maybe I was more fortunate than most, but in my parish days, and I did serve in that apple of Dr. Scare's eye, the great Iowa West District, I was blessed with 12 good elders. They were men who defined themselves biblically, and what a source of joy and strength they were. And each in his own way was contributing greatly to the mission of the church. Some gave money, some gave of their time, some went out to knock on doors. But with the sort of priesthood, that sort of priesthood and self-understanding, it is my conviction that God will attend His precious gospel with His Spirit, and that the priesthood of all believers will be discovered for what it is, not a bill of rights, not a set of duties, but a call to be living and elect stones in the one living stone. And that, of course, means suffering, personal suffering, as we daily drown and crucify the old Adam in us, and corporate suffering as Satan launches into his church, the elect stones church, which displays the precious gospel and holds it as the sole reason for its being. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and we're now ready for some discussion. I believe you have witnessed that what we had said at the outset, that he is a good digger. He has dug well also in the Old and New Testament for us on a very important subject. So we'll entertain questions at the microphones. Introduce yourself, please, and then address your question. I'll try to keep some order if there's a big line there. I don't see a big line yet, so be thinking, and move to the mic if you have something that you'd like to share. All right, at this microphone.
Bernell Eckhart from Berlin, Wisconsin. As I think I understand this correctly, I thought of modern critical scholarship on the Old Testament, which, as I understand it, commonly claims that clerical elements in the Pentateuch are due, by and large, to the influence of the P source, an attempt to establish the priestly community by the use of priestly propaganda, such as we find in P. And it seems to me that if I remember this correctly, this Exodus text is regularly used also in modern critical scholarship to argue a biblical strain which runs contrary to that of the P source. And if that's correct, then it seems to me that you have effectively undercut not only the anti-clericalism in our midst, but also the proponents of the JEDP source. And in line with that, I'd like to ask a question, because it seems to me that I've further seen that a further strain in modern scholarship, which I've heard about, and I don't really know what to do with it, so I'd like to ask your opinion on it. They claim regularly, it seems to me, that there's a division in the Old Testament between priests and Levites. And I don't know where that's leading or where it came from, but I wonder if you could comment on that.
Just briefly, and I may have done too much of that in the paper, there are a wide spectrum of viewpoints about the origins of and the position of priestly circles in ancient Israel. And maybe this would be helpful just to alert you to two very recent books. I'll mention the one by Wybray, a scholar in England who has absolutely no confessional motivation, but has produced a rather long book now saying that the whole JEDP edifice, capstoned in the priestly community in Babylon, has fallen apart. He has nothing to build in its place, but what I find intriguing is that he at points argues and is sympathetic with one German scholar who thinks the whole thing was written by one person. Now, if that's the case, all we have to do is move that person back 1,000 years to Moses, and we will have a hospitable environment out there.
This microphone.
Dave Steckholtz, Oakmont, Pennsylvania. Dean Wenthe, you were affectionately called Rabbi on presentation, for which we're very grateful. What I particularly liked is that you brought out the strong sense of community that we as Living Stones together share. And I think that's something that we encounter in the parish ministry day by day, with a strong privatistic notion that many people have of Christianity, which is really inimical to the Christian message. And I thank you for that.
Thank you. I suppose that needs no particular comment. Is this mic still working? Okay. Also at that microphone?
Yes, Andy Steinman, Fraser, Michigan. Wenham, in his commentary on the Leviticus and the New International Commentary on the Old Testament, treats the Levitical laws, especially the ones applying to the people, for instance, the dietary laws, as having the same type of accent that you brought out in Exodus, that it sets them apart as God's chosen community, that the dietary laws were not there, as many have tried to treat them, for health reasons, but to as a way of reinforcing their priesthood as God's chosen community, and then also to be used in a missionary context, as you brought out, and to help them, as you brought out in your last point, to keep them apart and separate from the fallen order of the world. It seems ironic to me almost that we have Peter talking about the priesthood in the New Testament, and he's the one who resisted the most the setting aside of the Levitical laws. Seems like an interesting contrast there. But I'd wondered if you would comment, maybe. Leviticus seems to be such a neglected book among both pastors and laymen, and I think it has much to say about the priesthood of all believers and how to apply it. And if you could comment on maybe how to use it pastorally, because I think it is a neglected book that can be used pastorally when this insight is given.
Thank you, Andrew. I would certainly support your accent. In fact, I believe it's safe to say that Leviticus isn't frequently the topic of Bible classes or sermon texts in our circles, nor the description of the building of the tabernacle in the latter part of Exodus. And yet, I have found very suggestive and helpful an old commentary by Catreus on the book of Leviticus, wherein he does just what Wenham and others have done, is to say this marks the people as the chosen and the elect. And it does hold up the corporate aspect that Pastor Steckholz mentioned. I think all those things would help the church today, and Leviticus in particular, show that the community, the elect community, is to be set apart. I think the privatistic piety sets our people up to think about themselves in terms of the prevailing culture rather than in terms of the community of faith vision through the scriptures. And so instead of thinking about marriage before God and in terms of Ephesians 5, they think of it primarily in terms of falling in love or a legal contract. And I think that's where Leviticus could help us.
Okay, thank you. And also at the mic over here.
Randy Golter from Wheatland, Wyoming. Thank you for your presentation. Is there a fit between the priesthood of all believers and the living out of the justified, being justified before God with such programs as DE and confessional evangelism and cradle evangelism? If there is a fit, then what is that?
I'm not as familiar with those particular like cradle evangelism. I haven't seen. It sounds dangerous to me. strategically, I have raised three, and that's tried to avoid the cradle at many points. But I do want to kind of address your concern. I like the emphasis that Dr. Scare gave to the fact that our lived out election is justification. And we never point to our prayers, our piety, or our responses as the motivating, or I think the reason for people to consider the gospel. I would be concerned with whatever evangelism technique that the classic law gospel be kept in proper distinction. And particularly, what I fear is the imbalance sometimes, is that the law tends to come in and at the expense of the gospel, that the pure grace of God isn't held up in all its glory.
Thank you. I think that was a fine answer. I think this microphone still has precedence by standing up here first, so we'll go here first.
I suppose that if the Baptists were doing cradle evangelism and then we were trying to get their cradles, it would be cradle robbing, right? Well, I think I'll sit down now. Paul, Paul Herder, Clifton, New Jersey. Thank you for bringing out the distinctives in the priesthood of all believers as you have. I noticed that the New Testament text, as it is printed for us, is from the inspired version of the Bible, the New International Version. And this is a little bit off your topic, but perhaps you could respond to it. My Greek is very rusty, and I don't know if I'm the only one here that needs to make that confession. But in verse number 8, it does refer to they stumble because they disobey the message, which is also what they were destined for. I'm wondering if the way that this particular phrase is stated, that it reveals a Calvinistic bent to it. It appears to me that what they're trying to say is they stumble, rather that what they are destined for is to disobey the message, whereas what I was understanding is that the stumbling is what they were destined for because they disobeyed the message. Is that a correct understanding, or am I all wet?
The I theologically, I would say you're right on the money, and I'm just trying to look through the notes here in terms of, I would think that to read this in with Reformed assumptions, and if the translation is privy to that and requires that, it would be flawed to infer on the basis of my notes that they were destined to, you know, kind of a double election theory. But I'd probably want to look at it more carefully myself in terms of getting out some more tools to really be fair. But I think it's a good point to raise.
It might also be a question whether that is actually in the Greek an election term, I suppose, or foreordained. Over at this microphone, then.
Norman Nagel from the other place. You invited us to rejoice in the Lamed of possession. In doing that, one comes upon Lashem, and that takes one to Eis Onoma, and so to baptism. What are we given in Scripture to confess of the relationship between baptism and priesthood, and then baptism and ordination?
I love my colleagues at the other institution, but wait until I ask a question in St. Louis. I think you've raised a very good point, and I would hold baptism to be central. In fact, I did mention this, but to me it's striking, and I'll just take a little exegetical excursion if I could. The title of Exodus in Hebrew is Eles Shemot. These are the names of. Now, it's very striking that that comes after the blessing of Jacob in Genesis 49. So that the Hebrew linkage there is with the names, and there named is the line that is to come from Judah, the messianic line, and I think one could build a great deal in the Old Testament in terms of the name that will be the seed, that whoever is linked to the promised seed is privy to and a part of the election, the call of Yahweh. So that I would coordinate, and I think St. Peter does. Baptism is central here to ordination. I'll save that for another day, but I like the idea that you're suggesting it be linked to our fundamental incorporation into Christ.
Take two more questions, first here and then there.
Jonathan Shaw, Winchester, Virginia. First, I'd like to thank you very much for a very illuminating lecture, Professor Wenthing. And I was wondering if you might like to comment on the incarnational aspects of the priesthood, that is the priest standing in the place of Christ, especially, if you might, comparing how within the church the pastor stands as priest between God and the laity, and within the world, all believers standing as priest between God and perhaps the unregenerate. Again, you might comment on the incarnational aspects there. Thank you.
Yes, I think the Old Testament is a marvelous antidote to anti-incarnational aspects. And let me characterize what I've experienced as a popular piety in our culture, namely, me, Jesus, heaven, hell. Those are the operative components. Now, if one goes through popular preaching and some cultural pressures that way, the sacraments, in my judgment, are very much peripheralized as central saving acts of God. They're really not essential to salvation in a way that gives one reason to daily remember his baptism. Similarly, there is no driving force all too often, if that piety is underscored, to be faithful in attendance at the Lord's Supper, or to look upon the pastor's presence in the liturgy as what our old liturgy said and our new one too, that in the name of and in the stead of my Lord, I forgive you your sins. I think the traditional Lutheran piety, working out of Luther, was a student of the Old Testament for 32 of his 34 years, and I think he preserved in his pastoral writings that centrality to the sacraments and the centrality of the pastor as a priest who suffers on behalf of his people, who prays for his people, and who represents Christ to them. I think all of that helps us, and I think we should resist the impulse in much like Fuller or other places that would say piety, spirituality, is the opposite of carnalness. As one person at an evangelical conference told me, you are a carnal Christian. And by that, meant something about the beverages we were drinking that night. He missed the point, I think, of the biblical witness.
I think the one question yet, and then we'll have to close, I believe.
Well, I thank you.
For
this presentation of a basic text for the Missouri Synod. I grew up in German in the Missouri Synod, and there was that picture, a large picture of Dr. Walther, you know, in the church hall. And it says under there, Ihr seid das auserwählte Volk, das königliche Priestertum. That's what Dr. Walther had to say to the Missouri Synod. You are the chosen people. And properly understood, I'm not trying to belittle that, but that was heard often at mission festivals, and I hope that you take this text home and preach it to your people and have them understand they are the people of God, redeemed, and what a meaning that is for our people today to say that to them.
Thank you. That reminds me of the last comment of something which appeared in our reading the other day in one of Luther's great treatises on the councils and the church. Luther expresses the opinion that it might have been well in the Apostles' Creed, what he calls the Children's Creed, that instead of the word church, we might have used people. I believe in a holy Christian people. And what I think we heard this morning, Old Testament to New, also underscores this people, the elect of God. Once again, we want to thank Professor Wenthe for a stimulating lecture.